and welcome back to the Two Brandons. This is Brandon Thomas.
And this is Brandon Easton.
And we coming back at you a little quicker than usual. So we're going to try to... It's only been a couple weeks since the last one, so we're super excited. Now, we want to do something very very specific and what we think is what we think should be super cool. We're both huge process junkies, obsessed with, well, I'm obsessed with movie commentaries and behind the scenes and just really kind of digging down into the creative process that actually leads to this stuff getting made, because it is a process. And one of the things that you definitely learn quickly, if you're going to do this professionally, you have to love the process. You have to love the process of actually coming up with the stories, figuring out how to get the stories in the specific space you have to get them in. And personally, that's been something that I always enjoy. I love the process of actually, you know, writing a script for a comic book, having that artwork come back, you know, the back and forth between you and the artist. I mean, it's one of those things that really, really kind of sustains me and really makes it enjoyable for me. You know, working on this type of stuff is, it's essentially a team sport. So,
right.
You know, without your artist, without your colorist, without your letter, without a good editor, you know, you're always going to be missing like that final piece. So it's really, you know, it's really nice when everything comes together. And we touched on this briefly in the last episode, but working in comics and working in entertainment has given me personally such a greater appreciation of things that are good, because there are so many opportunities along the way for things to unintentionally not be good, you know, despite a creator's best intention. So,
right.
Working in comics has given me an even elevated amount of appreciation for other great comics and TV shows and movies. So, on that theme, how we're going to start this off is we are going to start off by talking about something that's available that me or Easton have written. And just kind of give a little background into what went into making it. So for me, I definitely want to. I am so excited to talk about Horizon 6, which actually comes out in stores next Wednesday. But I want to go back momentarily and talk about Horizon 5, which is actually in stores right now and has been for a couple of weeks. So the first Horizon storyline is 6 issues, and so really coming to the end of this first storyline and trying to really stick the landing and leave an enormous impression with you guys out there to make sure that everyone is super excited to come back for the second arc, which starts with issue 7. So with issue 5, one of the cool things about it, and I've talked about this before, this is one of the first scripts that I wrote knowing that Juan Gedion was going to draw the book. Because originally I had written 3 full, actually I think I had written 5 full scripts, but we used 3 of those before Juan even joined the book. So it was very much it's kind of one of those things where you're kind of like feeling each other out. I'm paying close attention to kind of like how verbose and how detailed the scripting is, and whether or not Juan is enjoying that, or if he would enjoy it if the script was a little less detailed and gave him a little more flexibility to kind of inject himself, you know, fully inject himself into the process. And so once I got to Horizon 4 and 5, these were scripts that I was writing knowing that Juan was drawing the book, knowing what types of things he likes to draw, and being able to really tailor the script toward the things and the type of images that I've seen him do well in the past. So the interesting thing about 5 is 5 is essentially it's a big interrogation. You know, our main alien characters have captured someone from the kind of the Earth Initiative that is threatening their planet. And it's part interrogation, but it's, I don't want to call it a seduction, but there's a little more going on in the scene than your standard interrogation. And there's one aspect of it that I was super proud of. The guy who has been kind of, you know, kidnapped, he's a, you know, he's a black dude. And so I came up with this idea of doing a code switch inside the interrogation. So, like, for you guys that don't actually know what that refers to, it in essence, it's kind of how you change kind of like your mannerisms and the way that you're talking depending on the audience. You know, it's kind of like that thing where when you're having a conversation with your mother, it's a little different than when you're having a conversation with your brother or your friend. Now, with black people, with minorities, it may be even more pronounced where, you know, there's always that joke about, like your white voice on the phone.
And nobody knows what you actually look like because they can't tell right, by your right. voice. Cause you're not sounding like you just came out of, don't drink your juice in the hood while you're, you know, living in the projects.
Right. But so essentially, I was able to play with that in this interrogation scene where this character that they've captured is basically kind of cycling through these personas that he thinks will have an effect on his, you know, on his captors and on how they view him. So I was able to, it was the first time, it's something I've wanted to do for a while, but it was the first time I was able to actually work in like a really cool example of code switching. And if you really pay attention to how he uses language in the very start of the issue versus how he uses it in the middle of the issue where he kind of, you know, kind of drops this persona that he's trying to project. And it was, you know, it's kind of one of those things that you write in and you know that the majority of people are probably not even going to notice it. But you know that there's a few people out there that are going to read it and be like, oh, okay, I see what he did there. But there was something in the 5th issue that I was really, really excited about. And it really came out very well. And it's one of those classic build-up issues. You know, issue 6 is essentially a huge, huge fight, a lot of cool developments, super cool cliffhanger, and issue 5 had to basically set the table for this big, you know, final epic showdown that happens at the end of this first story arc. And, you know, it's something that I was really proud of. And it's also, you know, anyone that has ever worked in comics always wants extra pages. Like, I'm always asking my editor if I can have, like, you know, 2 extra pages. Like, I got extra pages in Horizon 1, and Horizon 6 actually has 4 additional pages. So there's a tiny sequence in 5 where it's kind of like a montage of the ruined state of Earth that if I had a couple of more pages, I would have made a little longer, but I think that you still kind of get the gist of it without it going, you know, on and on. So it was it's a super cool issue that I'm very, very proud of. And I really feel like creatively we're all get like, this is the part of the book where you can see us start to get locked in. Like, I think that you can see that, you know, like the scripting is getting a little bit sharper, you know, the art is getting a little bit sharper, the coloring. So, you know, it's just one of those, I've really been, anxiously awaiting getting to this part of the series, because I feel that this is when the book is really starting to get good and is really going to take off. And so we're going to put a lot of promo and a lot of marketing behind our first trade, which comes out January 18th, the same day as issue 7. And I'm very anxious to sit down and kind of, you know, I try not to read my stuff word for word. There's usually like a scene or something that I check out, you know, just to kind of see how it plays or see how the dialogue feels to me. But I don't know. Like, are you someone that can actually read their own work yet? Or I know everyone's a little different.
That's a good question. I think what I do is I'll go over when I get about, well, the average comic book these days is about 20 pages.
Yes.
Most of the indies that I've worked for, luckily, have been 24, with the exception of like the bigger independent companies like IDW. Mm-hmm. When I get about 10 to 15 pages in, what I find myself doing is going back over the first 10 to 15 pages, and I read scenes to make sure that this is going to be a little bit crazy, but what I try to do is make sure that my prose style in a comic book script doesn't go too far in over-explaining certain scenes, because I love it when my artists interpret scenes and make them better.
Yeah.
I'm not an Alan Moore kind of writer in the sense where I overwrite panels, unless there's a scene or an angle or something that needs to be addressed or visually identified in the sequence. I generally give very basic but clear instructions on what I want to see in the panel. I'm a big fan of Warren Ellis's style of scripting, which is extremely sparse until it doesn't have to be, until you need it to not be sparse. That's how I kind of look at the process. So when I go back over my scripts, I'm looking for visual consistency and also story and dialogue consistency. One of the things I find myself doing, and I know a lot of particularly comic book writers and television screenwriters do this, we'll sometimes repeat ourselves in dialogue without being aware that we've repeated ourselves in dialogue.
I have a great story about that.
Right. So we'll wind up saying literally almost the exact same chunk of dialogue or the exact same response or the exact same question that already has been clearly answered. So I find myself going back through and cleaning up anything that's logistically problematic. I also find myself cleaning up anything that is a speed bump, because a lot of times I feel like me and a lot of other writers I know, sometimes we overwrite scenes in the sense that we have dialogue saying what the picture is already saying.
Yeah.
Because it's comic books, so we should show a lot more than telling. I can give you a clear example of this. And I don't think I have it in front of me, unfortunately. Oh, actually, I do have it in front of me. We're lucky. In issue 1 of Vampire Hunter D from Stranger Comics, Mission to Mars, Message from Mars. I don't know what page it is. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay, on page 7, panel 2 of Vampire Hunter D, Message to Mars, issue 1, there's a scene where the two main characters are staring at the Martian sunset from inside a Martian colony. In the original script, I had the male character responding to the female character in that same panel. And that word balloon not only would have kind of covered the beauty of the Martian sunset, but it would be thematically redundant, because she's trying to seduce this guy, even though she knows he has a wife and child back on Earth. And originally, I had him like kind of stuttering and not knowing what to say. And I removed that during the editing process when I got the artwork back with the balloons in it, because I felt, why would we have him speak here? It's better to have him just stare and not respond, because in the next panel, he talks about the fact he has a wife and child. So let him sit silently as she is trying to seduce him. And I felt dramatically, and after the fact, I'm looking at it, it's absolutely fantastic that it went that way. So I tend to look for ways to let the artwork speak for itself rather than overriding dialogue bubbles. Because particularly in the early 2000s, and particularly at some of the bigger comic book companies, there are some writers who fill up pages with word balloons to such a degree you can no longer see the artwork. And to me, I feel that that's a failing, because if you have to say that much, you probably should be writing novels and not comic books. And I feel some comic book writers, not all of them, even extremely talented ones who I admire, some of them overwrite scenes. And it's a comic book. And it's very important that people understand that unless you have a really big speech that really needs to be said, leave some space for the artwork to breathe. And I feel that that's something that I'm still trying to learn. I did Transformers Deviations for IDW last year, or actually earlier this year.
Uh-huh.
And in that, it was like, what if Optimus Prime had survived the events of Transformers, a movie of 1986, right? And I only had 20 pages to rewrite in its entirety Transformers the movie.
That's insane.
I think I pulled it off sort of, but I know for a fact that on pages like 18 to 20, I needed, and I know I absolutely needed at least 3 to 4 more pages. But I had to squeeze so much in that I wanted to tell in such a way that I wound up sacrificing so much of the visuals, because a Transformers book, in my opinion, should be about showcasing the robots. If you have an artist who's worth their weight in salt and can draw mecha and giant robots correctly, that's what I want to see when I read a robot book. If I want to see people talking, I'll read a novel or a short story. But when it's a robot book, I want to see the robots in action. I want to see them actually transform, because the book's called Transformers, you know. So I found myself having to use way too many word balloons. And I found myself cramming so much visual information in that I was deeply unhappy with the last page or two. Now, I love doing it. I love the book itself, because I think as an experiment, it came out fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I personally, this is just me, I was personally disappointed with how much space I didn't have. But that's also my fault, because I should have laid out the panel sequences a lot differently. And that's something you only can really deal with after the fact.
Right.
So that when you get your next, after something is drawn, unless this is Marvel or DC, who can afford to have people redraw entire books or redraw entire sequences, you basically have to go with what you got. And sometimes it doesn't look the way you want it to look. Sometimes it doesn't look as dynamic as you imagined. And sometimes it's absolutely fine, but you just need at least one more page to flesh it out to get the satisfying dramatic conclusion that you want.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I feel I'm still struggling with. And, you know, to bounce off an earlier point that you had mentioned that you love DVDs and you love looking at the behind-the-scenes stuff. We had talked about the Star Wars, I think off the mic, we talked about the Star Wars Force Awakens DVD and Blu-ray sets.
Yeah.
And how there's like two now.
Yes.
And like the movie just came out, you know, like we got two of them. Anyway, so that took me back to 1999 when I was in graduate school for filmmaking. And I remember when this is at a time when DVDs were starting to slowly replace VHSs. And I remember so many film students whining and complaining that they didn't like DVDs. And I used to sit there and think they were the dumbest human beings alive, because if you're a film student, first of all, you want to watch the film in its proper aspect ratio, which means those black bars that some people don't seem to like on the top and the bottom. That's how the film actually would look if it was projected on a large screen, because most TVs cannot be the size of a house.
Right.
You would need to squish the image into its proper aspect ratio, meaning what the director and the filmmakers, what it's actually supposed to look like. So, I love DVDs. I love the quality of DVDs as opposed to VHS tapes. I mean, DVDs are not perfect because they suffer from artifacting, but a DVD does not degrade. Like, if you every time you rewound a videotape, you were destroying it.
Yep.
Every time you played a videotape, you were destroying it. Every time. With DVDs, it's a little bit different. So I, being a film student, this is what my point is in all this, I was stunned by at how many film students didn't like the fact that you had commentaries. They didn't seem to appreciate the fact you had full-length, behind-the-scenes documentaries explaining the creative process from scripting to post-production.
Yep.
I don't understand that. And there are people out there, even today, who seem to not want to know how things are created. And I'm not talking about your average fan. I'm talking about people in the creative process who claim the creative process. I can think of about one or two guys off the top of my head who seem to frown upon learning the intricacies of storytelling and learning the intricacies of thematic, how to build a thematic undercurrent. Those are integral to the story making process. And DVDs and some of these prestige format comic books and the absolute editions of like some big DC books and omnibuses and things of that nature,
yep,
they all have tons of supplemental or behind the scenes material that changed the way, me personally, I created stories. Warren Ellis and Alan Moore, people who I mentioned before, they have many volumes of various omnibi, I guess you would say, and various absolute editions or perfect editions that have scripts and early conceptuals and tons of things of that nature that I think are vitally important to anybody who wants to be a comic book writer or anybody who wants to be a screenwriter or storyteller. If you're frowning upon that stuff, you probably shouldn't be. You shouldn't be a storyteller. I mean, this is my opinion. But I think that if you're frowning or if you're not taking it seriously, then you might not be built for this. Because the one thing I've learned from Stephen King is that a writer is constantly in the process of learning. We are constantly in the process of building.
Yep.
And that is the most important part of all. And if you're not down for that, you know, I got two words for you, you know.
To quote the
Degeneration X guys.
yeah. It's great that you say that, because that's another one of the things that I wanted to talk about. I wanted to talk about, spend a little time talking about what you do when you're not writing. Like, what kind of get you ready, you know, for the next script. So right now, I just turned in another script for my super secret Lion Forge project that mm-hmm. I think probably gonna announce it in January, actually, you know, what it is and who the artist is. But it's been a great exciting experience so far. It's always, you know, there's always that feeling before a book starts that's really hard to replicate when it's mm-hmm. really just you and kind of five or six people like in a room working on this thing and no one knows anything about it. And you kind of, it's kind of a little between excitement and anxiety. Cause you're like, are people going to like this? Is this going to work out? Are we going to be able to, you know, kind of like hit the mark that we're trying to hit? So I'm definitely in that stage on my Lion Forge book. And I just turned in another script, I think, like, really, really early in the morning last week. And so now I have probably, like, I mean, like, 2 days, maybe. Like, I'm in my kind of, I guess you'd call it, like, the refractory period. Like, I'm in that period where I'm not actively working on a script for another day or two. And typically what I do is, you know, I usually read like I'm out of my mind, because once I'm, you know, right now it's taking me about, I would say, 7 or 8 days to do a full script that I'm, you know, pretty happy with, you know, happy enough to finally turn in. So I you know, this pattern is pretty typical for me, that the first maybe 3 or 4 days of doing the script, I'm still able to read other things normally, right? I can read comics and books and I can watch movies, but it's like right before I have to turn it in, I have like those 3 or 4 days where I get completely locked in on it, where I can't read anything. Anything that I read at that point just, you know, distracts me, because, you know, I have this, I always have this fantasy that I can, I can really aggressively work on 2 or 3 scripts at once. And that's
not possible, dude. I'm sorry.
Yeah. It's not. The only time I've been able to do it is if it's the same book. right?
Right.
So there are a couple of, I think Horizon, I think 5 and 6 I wrote together. Actually, I think I actually wrote 6 before I wrote 5, which is kind of strange. And then I think Horizon maybe 10 and 11 I also wrote together. But it's really difficult for me to really kind of immerse myself into two kind of completely separate universes and groups of characters at once. I'm trying to train myself to do it, but usually what happens is I'll start out, like, even in this, I started out working on the Lionforge script and another script, I can't say what it was for, but another script that was completely different. And for the first couple of days, I was able to kind of like install pages into both of them that I was happy with. But then I got to a point where it was like, all right, I have to put this other thing away and I have to focus completely on the Lionforge thing. So for the last, you know, 3 or 4 days of writing a script, you know, I can't read anything. So my weekly comic stacks, you know, are just kind of like approaching the ceiling slowly. So after I kind of get that, get the script out of the door and I kind of, you know, take a breath, and that feeling of having finished the script and turned it in is also, you know, amazing and hard to describe. And so, once that's over, I tend to kind of just like binge read or binge watch stuff. Even though I should do it a lot more because, you know, it's good for me on several levels. I found that exercise is also very good. Even when I'm working on things, you know, I have figured out so many story problems, you know, like, you know, while going out for a walk or a run or something like that. So that's kind of how I like to recharge kind of in between. You know, I like to read and consume a lot of stuff and, you know, occasional exercise. And then after that, you know, I'm ready to jump back into the next thing completely and totally, you know, for kind of like a week at a time. But so like how, like when you're in between stuff, like how do you kind of recharge or recover or get ready to keep, you know, to go to the next thing?
Okay. Well, it depends on what's happening. Like,
okay.
Like when I was working on Agent Carter and I had comic book stuff to start developing, you know, being at the office and being in a writer's room where you're creatively charged all day long. And then I was able to, you know, as soon as the end of the day, I had all this creative energy and I had, you know, even with my Agent Carter work, I still had like time in the evening to sit down and bang out like all kinds of concepts, all kinds of script material, all kinds of the other developmental material.
Uh-huh.
So in like, I find that if I'm very busy, particularly working in television, it is remarkably easy for me to maintain that creative energy into other things. What I've noticed about me is that if I'm not working on something huge, then the days start to melt together.
Uh-huh.
And it's been very difficult for me, particularly not recently, but previously it was very difficult for me to juggle multiple projects that were running simultaneously.
Uh-huh.
I'm doing that now with Vampire Hunter D and Mask, but I've got it figured out. The only trouble I'm having now is I have to start. Well, I have to start. I've been writing new TV pilot material.
Okay.
And I'm also writing a short story sample for a major international book franchise. And I've had to relearn the intricacies of that franchise, which I was not even into for years. So I've had to re-educate myself in the last like 10 to 15 years of this particular international book franchise. So it for me, what I do in between projects, if I'm working on multiple projects, I try to carve out at least 3 days to work on one thing.
Okay.
Because what I wind up doing is things start crashing together and I don't get anything done because I'm worried about too many things at one time.
Uh-huh.
So last week I had to finish some Mask related stuff. And then the week before that, I had to finish a bunch of Vampire Hunter D related stuff. Now I need to get back into both of them before the Christmas holiday. So for me, I'll be writing pretty much up through December 23rd.
Okay.
And I need to get as much, and I need to also get this short story sample done. I got to get 1,000 words for that out of the way. I've already laid out the basics of it. But when you're working, when you're submitting a sample for a book series, they only usually want to see the beginning of a short story idea. But in a very weird kind of way, that 1,000 words has to kind of function as its own entity.
Uh-huh.
You know, and that's where the tricky part comes
in. That's crazy.
Right. So a lot of this stuff in general is just, it's all about time management. It's all about time management. And I find sometimes if you don't have a real, if you're not really good at scheduling, which I'm really not, I have to, it has to be a very conscious effort to where I feel like I'm not going to get paid. And if I don't get paid, I won't survive. Is that kind of thing that's going to motivate me to working a little bit faster and a little bit harder. Mm. That's where I had been. So now things are a little bit different, but there was a point when every word I wrote was a matter of survival. And that can motivate me to getting stuff done. So, for example, today I've been immersing myself in the, you know, a book franchise universe all over again. And I have been immersing myself for the last like 6 weeks. But now I think I've got a good enough handle on the prose and on the universe's terminology that it would be relatively easy for me to get this sample done. So I have to get that sample done before Friday.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's not even a question. It has to be done before Friday.
Uh-huh.
So that's what's going to happen on my end, and that's pretty much where I'm at. So I try to just keep the developmental energy moving forward in the sense that if I have time after finishing a script on one property, then I'll start outlining scripts for the other property, and then after, you know, and then I outline the other property and I start scripting the other property. And then it's back and forth. It's like a tennis match. It's back and forth so that everything is filled in and I can keep my actual writing time to a minimum because I outline pretty extensively so that when it's time to write the script.
Me too.
Yeah, exactly. So when it's time to write the script, you're not going to be beating yourself up trying to figure out what happens next.
Yeah.
So that's what I kind of do in between the in between these particular, in between writing scripts and getting work done.
Uh-huh. And in regards to outline, I want to talk about outlining a little more because outlining is a huge, huge, to me, it's indispensable. And the reason why I try to, my outlines are insanely detailed is because it allows me to jump around in the story. So when I started writing comics maybe 10 or so years ago, I used to write sequentially. You know, I would just, you know, start at page one, go to page 22, you know, turn it in. And then what would happen was I would get stuck somewhere. So I would get stuck on page six and I would waste an entire day trying to figure out what was wrong with page six and lose all of this time. So what I do now is I make sure my my outlines are insanely detailed, and now I just jump all over the place. You know, it's like a, you know, it's like a puzzle that I'm trying to you know, put together. So if I'm sitting down and I'm getting started, like on my new Lionforge thing, I started with an action sequence. So, you know, that was something that could essentially kind of get my hand moving and get me feeling good and confident about what I was doing. And I was able to take that momentum into other scenes in the script that, you know, were kind of just, you know, messing with me for whatever reason, because they were difficult or I had to fit a lot of information into a tight space and I'm trying to figure out exactly how thin I can shave it, you know, without losing the kind of intent behind it. So I found that, you know, for me, outlining is enormously important. And I remember I was talking to David Walker about this, and he writes in sequence. So, like, I'm explaining this to him, and he's looking at me like I'm insane because I'm like, oh, yeah, you know, I remember one time where, you know, I wrote, you know, I think I was telling him how I wrote Horizon 6 before I wrote Horizon 5, and it was just, he just couldn't believe it. And I'm like, yeah, man, that's the only way I can, you know, or that's a way for me to be a lot more efficient in my time. So it's kind of like I'm sitting down and I'm like, I just want to get pages done. And it doesn't really matter to me until I get closer to the end, obviously, like which pages are being complete. So as long as, you know, something is getting in, kind of like in the document that I feel good about, you know, it's always easier to keep going. And for the rest of the year, I kind of, there's this project that I'm pitching, and it's been, you know, it's been a pretty lengthy development process, a lot of back and forth, and a lot of different outlines, a lot of different variations of scripts and scenes getting pulled in and out of things and put back in different orders and configurations. So I kind of have to, that's what I have to figure out in the kind of like over the holiday. Like that's my homework for the holiday to figure out kind of like an 8-page sequence that will give me the perfect first issue. And first issues are so, so difficult. We'll do an entire thing just about doing first issues and how challenging they are. But so I'm working on that. And then I also have a couple of pitches to finalize and get to people for projects for 2017. That's another thing about it never stops. You know, even if you get a project or you get two projects or you get three projects, you always have to keep, you know, one eye open and make sure that you have other things that are kind of like in the pipeline in case something happens with the other projects that you're currently working on. Because, you know, nothing lasts forever in comics, typically. So that's kind of what I've got on my plate for the rest of the year. So not too bad, but getting this Lionforge script out the door was a big kind of hurdle for me. So, you know, it'll be cool. You know, my wife has a lot of days off coming up from work, so a couple of 4-day weekends to look forward to over the holidays. So that's kind of where I'll be. And you know, I guess this feeds into our last thing we want to talk about, kind of our expectations for Star Wars Rogue One.
Yeah,
which releases at the end of this week. So, personally, I'm actually finding it a little easier to avoid things, avoid kind of obsessively looking at clips and trailers and reading interviews and stuff, which is what I did for, The Force Awakens. And I feel that I kind of took some of the, there were very few surprises in The Force Awakens, let's be honest, but I took, you know, I feel like I had already figured out a number of those surprises, and I feel like Rogue One, I'm going into with a little less information
than
I had for Force Awakens, so I'm really looking forward to that, because I feel like there may actually be some legitimate surprises that I haven't stumbled upon in my kind of voracious need to kind of know everything and see every screenshot and watch every trailer. So, you know, I'm looking forward to it, and I think, you know, I think it'll be very important for them to demonstrate that they can do Star Wars stories that are kind of unattached. Even though this one is attached, it's kind of rubbing up against a previous trilogy. But to do something that's legitimately standalone, I think will be very kind of profitable for Lucasfilm going forward with the whole Star Wars experiment.
Right. Yeah, I feel the same way too. I'm not as bouncing off the walls as I was for Force Awakens.
Yeah.
However, I do think that's a much better way to go about it, because I don't have a unreasonably high sense of entitlement as a fan. You know, I'm going to approach this as this is a supplemental story that's going to fill in the gaps about stuff that many of us have wondered about. And we're going to see the situation in the Star Wars universe right before the beginning of Episode 4, the original Star Wars, obviously. So I think it's really cool. I think it's going to be something very dark and very interesting. I'm definitely looking forward to seeing, first of all, this incredibly diverse situation that we have, you know, for the film. I mean, like, there are more Asians in this film than I've seen in a Hollywood blockbuster, I mean, a big budget Hollywood film in a very long time. In fact, I think there's more Asians in this film than probably the last time I've seen this many people of color that weren't African American was in the Matrix films.
Yeah.
You know,
which are also, which also don't get enough credit for being, alarmingly diverse, because we all want to argue about how much we hated the sequels or whatever, but it was one of the few like science fiction futures that people of color actually existed in. So, you know, to me, that always bears mention and bears a little more, you know, a little more respect overall for the franchise and kind of what it gave us visually in the kind of action sci-fi genre.
And there you go. And that's what I'm talking about. And I feel that it's Rogue One seems to be a different kind of story. It seems to be flowing in a different direction. It looks like, at least maybe this might be a spoiler, so turn it off now. But it feels like everybody dies at the end.
I feel like I will be disappointed if everyone doesn't die. I'm sure everyone is going to die, but I feel like I feel like 75% of the main characters need to be wiped out by the final frame.
It has to be. Because the one thing that has always bothered me to this day about the Star Wars universe is the fact that the stormtroopers don't seem to be as deadly as they should be.
Right.
And based on what I'm seeing here, there are there is an elite squad of stormtroopers wearing black armor who are basically like the Navy SEALs or the Rangers who actually go out to kill people.
Yeah, they're the death troopers.
Yeah, they call them death troopers for a reason. And they seem to be, you know, really serious about wiping people out.
Right.
So for me, I want to see that kind of thing. It'll be very interesting to see how, because I want to see a Star Wars film where the Empire is terrifying.
Right.
I feel that the Empire needs to be absolutely horribly terrifying. People need to be afraid of them. Mm-hmm. And that's not something we've typically gotten in the Star Wars films, because for the most part, they were just cannon fodder or just like complete idiots. They're like bumbling. They can't shoot straight. Well, you know what? We need to see it be a little bit darker than that, a little bit more serious, a little bit tougher than that. And Rogue One, at least based on the trailers that we've seen, the Empire is a force to be reckoned with. The Empire is terrifying, and they're going to kill people. Yep. And people are going to get hurt, and it's going to be very interesting to see how that plays out. So with that being said, unlike The Force Awakens, which had so many things to fix and so many things to live up to, Rogue One has this ability to tell a story and be unencumbered by everybody's high expectations or sense of entitlement.
Right.
So I'm looking forward to it. You know, I have no real negative thing about it. I mean, I haven't really seen a lot of negativity about it, thank God. Or maybe I've just blocked or unfriended all the people who would be saying something negative.
Yeah, I think I've been doing that in general. Mm-hmm. I've been doing a lot of the unfollow button on Facebook has become my best friend, where you can unfollow, you can remove people from your feed, but you still remain friends. So you can actually go to their page and if you want to interact with them. But I've found great comfort in that this last month or so, the ability to just be like, oh, okay, I think, you know, I'll unfollow you. We can stay friends, I guess, for a while, but I don't want you in my feed because it's, you know, right. this negativity is just, you know, just stuff I don't want to see. But without getting too far off track, you know, very excited about Rogue One, and I'm sure we'll do another one of these and we'll talk about our impressions of it. And then I want to get another viewing in, but I also want to talk about The Force Awakens 1 year later. And if some of our, I know. See, he's laughing because he already knows what it's going to be. So, be on the lookout. We'll probably do like a big Star Wars extravaganza where we'll talk about Rogue One and then also talk about kind of how Force Awakens looks a year later and several, for me, several viewings later and kind of like my overall impressions and feelings about it kind of in hindsight and whether or not that matches up with our craziest episode to date. So
that'll be fun. Oh, yeah, when we were going crazy because all the geeks were whining about Finn. Yeah, all about that. Yeah, that was fun times.
Yeah. So, to be continued on whether or not that's going to happen again. But yeah, man, we actually want these process installments to be a little shorter for you guys, so a little easier to consume. So don't think we're being lazy because we only gave you 45 minutes and not our usual 70. But you know, and we also keep it clean for the kids in case we have some younger viewers that are a little more interested in learning about this process stuff. But well, I enjoyed it. I hope you guys did too. And please let us know when we post this up. Give us some feedback. Let us know if it was helpful to you guys, other aspiring creators out there. And if there's any specific questions that you guys have about the process, about outlining, about pacing, you know, in anything that you guys might want to know, please, you know, do not hesitate to let us know either on the Two Brandons Facebook page or our, you know, separate Facebook pages. We can keep track of it. But, you know, want to wish you guys a happy holidays. I know it's been an interesting, tumultuous and sometimes intense year, but I kind of feel bad because professionally this was like a great year for me. You know, I had a lot of great things happen in my career, but I feel kind of like the backdrop of that, the world at large, was really not what I wanted it to be. So, you know, ever the eternal optimist, you know, I hope that it can get a little better for a lot of us and the world in the next year. So we thank you guys for spending some time with us, and we're gonna get more of these out for y'all. We gonna get back on it because I'm feeling you know, like negligent. So we gonna make sure we get y'all more installments on a more timely fashion. Especially if they're shorter. So, yeah, man.
Well, I mean, the best thing is that I'm definitely looking forward to 2017. Yeah. I don't know if we're going to get another episode in before January 1st. But there were so many really great things that happened for a lot of people I know. I mean, you know, Thomas here has had a fantastic year. I've had a pretty good year. My friend Jeffrey Thorne, Hannibal Taboo, just like Lion Forge, like Joe Illich at Lion Forge.
Yeah,
and,
we're rebuilding.
Just so much stuff going on. IDW had a great year. We got me, Brandon, Enrique Carrion, and a couple other folks, and Jeffrey Thorne as well, got work at Marvel Comics. There's so much. I mean, just so many really cool things. And one of the things I would love to do with the Two Brandons podcast in 2017 is to have a lot more guests come where we, you know, interview folks and we get to meet other people and expose you to other people. And we focus a lot on some indie creators who may have not gotten enough shine in the last couple of years who are putting out some really good work. I've had a lot of people like Brandon Perlow, who you know created who helped to put out Watson and Holmes. I had a guy named Russell Nohelty, who was doing a lot of work in the indie scene. I have Brian Hill from Top Cow, who's now a writer on Ash vs. Evil Dead. There's been a long line of people who's been, you know, basically saying, hey, what can we do to be on the Two Brainless podcast? So I'm like, hey, well, first of all, we got to record more. So, but yeah, I mean, I would definitely like in 2017 for us to have even more interactivity. And one day, somehow, I would love to do a live
one
episode where we actually have people call in. Now that would be awesome.
Yeah.
I don't know how we can figure that out. I mean, there's a way to do it because there's podcasts like the Black Tribbles and there's a few other ones that do live feeds and live communication and things like that. So there's a lot of stuff on the horizon. I would love to do a YouTube show with me and Brandon Thomas, maybe basically the YouTube version of this where we actually are in a studio together and we have, you know, graphics and video and music. There's a lot of stuff that would be pretty cool that we could do. And we would love to have more interactivity from our fans. I mean, we have people listening in, but we never hear from you. So we definitely want to get more people involved in the Two Brandons podcast community. So that's something I'm definitely looking forward to. And I just want to say, I hope everybody has a fantastic Christmas, Kwanzaa, Hanukkah, you know, New Year, the whole nine yards, whatever you're into. I hope you have a great time. And I know that the world isn't what we want it to be, but let's just, you know, keep on working every day and fighting a good fight. And there are things we can do to resist the darkness in the world, and we have to do them. We can't wait. We can't beg. We have to physically do things. So keep that in mind as we move into 2017, and here's hoping for a brighter tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah, amen. All right, sir. Well, I will see you next time. We'll see you guys next time. And have a happy holiday. Best wishes to you and your families and your own creative pursuits. And in 2017, we'll do better. We'll do even better. So we'll see you guys soon. And thank you again.